Thank you very much. Yes, I'm pleased and honoured that you want to speak to me.
Such
a long time ago since I raced, and as my wife said, oh, gracious, she said, nobody remember you cycling, so it just shows, doesn't it? That
it certainly does.
I remember a little bit.
No, I can remember it very clearly, because I think that, and we'll touch on it a little later on, is the Christmas Carnival series, and we had our local riders, and we used to cheer for them, and you were one of the scratchmen, and we always used to be willing you up from wherever you were in the pack to try and to get up and win any of those races. So we were always chanting for you, Frank. Let's go back to where things all started. Where did you grow up? Are you originally always been in Sheffield?
I have, yes. I was born down at Devonport. I've been in Sheffield all my life. I'm 77 and I've been blessed with a truly wonderful life. We all have our little bits of ups and downs, bumps in the road, as they say, but yes, I've come through well. I'm farming. I enjoy that lifestyle. We've had a lovely lot of frost lately, which have dried things up. I mention the frost because I still have a run of a morning, and I go up to the overworld. I can see where I ran as I go up and down, and I can, in the day, I can count in how many stride throughs I've done on the oval, or the footmarks in the frost. But I mean, at my age, you could hardly call them stride throughs, but a good fast shuffle, I suppose, is the best way to describe it.
Nice and crisp, though. That's the thing. Get some good, solid, fresh air through the nostrils. It's Sheffield. We know it can be quite frosty. That's Tasmania for you, isn't it? The northwest coast.
Yes. Yeah, we're very, very fortunate. Sheffield's always a bit colder through the winter, and probably a bit warmer through the summer. So we're blessed where we live, all of us, aren't we?
Oh, no doubt about that. Best place to live in the world. Frank, what drew you to cycling as a young man? Was it a man called Bert Viney?
That is correct. He was my grandfather, and he raced. His brothers also raced. Lost my father at a young age. My grandfather sort of filled in. I was very fortunate there, and, of course, his whole life revolved around cycling, so we talk cycling. Yeah, I mean, he used to tell some incredible stories. Like one day he went over 1904 and rode the, it was the Warrnambool to Melbourne then. They went over on the boat, two or three of them, Tasmania, and of course the only gear they had was what they could carry on their bike. And they rode as far as Colac, which is the halfway mark between Melbourne and Warrnambool, and stayed the night. The next day, they rode on down to Warrnambool. They had one day's rest, and after that, on the Saturday, they raced back, put their clothes on a train. He said there was only one vehicle virtually on the road, because the roads were rough. They just had to ride through the creeks and bumpy roads. Their bikes they called old bone shakers. And, I saw advertisements from that era, and obviously advertising bikes, and they said, you know, out of the 40-odd bikes that were still together and were able to make the distance, so many of them were champions, which was a particular make of bike then. So wonderful stories, and certainly inspired me to get interested.
And when did you realise that this was a sport that you could really excel in? Was it something you took to quite quickly?
No, I played football, underage football, and always wanted to race a cycling, but one day at football I got ironed out completely, and when I realised after I came around, I thought, well, whoever wanted to be a cyclist, I've got to get out of this football game, which I did. I mean, I wasn't blessed, I think, with a great deal of talent, but I used to put a lot of work in and did some, you know, very training ride. For instance, I used to ride from Sheffield through to Smithton and back in the one day, and go down by La Trobe to make sure we had as much distance as we could get. Got to Smithton, would have a counter meal. One particular day we tried two or three beers, but God, that didn't work, because it went straight to our legs, and it was a pretty difficult ride home.
These days they have coffee.
Other disappointing thing was that if you plugged into a headwind all the way through and then the jolly wind dropped or turned around on you, that used to be a bit of a heartbreaker too, but it's part of it.
And the great Richie Port rides from Hadspin to Scottsdale and back down through the sidling, so that's the way to travel. You need to get those miles in the legs, I guess.
Well, to touch on Richie, I mean, he's done a fantastic job. Absolutely, I don't think people realise this. Only close following cycling fans understand, you know, what a fantastic job that little lamb's done.
Talking about your training methods, you tapped into an American college swim coach at one stage to do different varying things with your fitness. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, there was a swim coach in America who was, might have been Don Scollinger was the name, but I could be corrected there. But anyway, I contacted him and said I was very keen on swimming, which was a complete fib, but I wanted to know if you could send me a training schedule. He did that, and then I converted that training schedule to cycling best I could. It was a form of interval training, but it was it was ahead of its time, and it certainly helped me. We do all sorts of things when we want to try and achieve, and as I've said, you know, a couple of times already, I know I wasn't blessed with talent, but I was prepared to do more work than the rest. And my dear old granddad used to say to me, well, just don't get carried away, because no matter how good you get, just around the corner is somebody better. Yes, not far wrong either, is it?
Voice of reason, that is for sure. The Christmas carnivals, Frank, touched on them earlier. I can remember watching them as a young kid, that must have been, going through the 70s, that must have just been something special, the huge crowds that were there, the overseas riders that used to come to the carnivals, and you were right in the thick of it. It must have been, and the thousands carnivals, we sometimes forget about those, as an extension of the Christmas carnivals. That must have been a great time in your life.
Yes, it was a fantastic time. You just said the carnivals, the thousands were a great race that the government sponsored. I used to hold that in February, but I mean, the Christmas Carnival series was just out of this world. I don't really try to tell people because it's a different era, a different time, and they don't understand. I mean, people now, I probably don't want to go and sit on hard seats all day and watch athletic sports when they've got the fantastic TV coverage of sport at that time all over the world. But the crowds were enormous. I've got photos here of at La Trobe, but not even standing distance standing room between the bike track and the grandstand. I mean, incredible crowds, as they say, packed to the rafters.
Did you feel you were supported, because there were all those Tasmanians there? Here comes Frankie Atkins, the wonderful late Steve Daly would be lighting you up, and also Tiger Dowling saying, here comes Frankie Atkins. I can remember the call. He used to get the crowd really rolling. That must have give you an extra little spur in the old pins.
Yes, they did. Particularly Tiger. I mean, I was just a tad before Steve Daly. But Steve did commentate some of our races that I was involved in, but Tiger was a law unto himself. I mean, the things he used to say, I mean, I can remember talking about going up and down like the girls' pants at King's Cross. And that was, you know, one of his sayings, and he got away with it.
Yeah.
even though I've just said it, it doesn't really belong to this present era.
But I don't think we'll edit that out. I think that's typical Tiger, and that's the way he operated. You won professional titles. You were third in the Sun Tour, I think it was, and then you got a puncture, and then they gobbled you up. You finished third. I think you finished third in 71 and 73. You won in Lavington in 79. You won the six-dayer in Launceston in 78, second in the National Road Championship 72, and you won a six-dayer in New South Wales in 74. You started to really hit your straps through that whole decade of the 70s, didn't you?
Yes, I had a great run through the 70s, and I mean, obviously enjoyed it. Lavington at that time was the richest wheel race in the world. It was, you know, a real thrill to win that one. I often used to well race better a bit after Christmas, because on the farm we were very busy coming up to Christmas with harvest and things.
Yeah.
But once everything was organised, by Christmas I used to slip into a bit more training. But, I mean, not making excuses. The scratch races were my favourite race. And two or three years I won four of having six scratch races held along the coast. Not backward in saying the things, because I earned them. I mean, I trained. I did more training probably than anybody.
Yep.
And being small of stature, I think that also encouraged spectator support, and I used to like to race from the front in those scratch races, and of course a little man out the front trying to hang on attracted a fair bit of support, as you can imagine.
Yeah, I can remember it. I can remember it. Frank, stick with us. We'll take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about some of the other things that you've done in your sporting life. Well, my special guest is Frank Atkins, a legendary bike rider here on the Northwest Coast. We'll be back shortly. Welcome back to the Sideline View. My very special guest is Frank Atkins. People would know Frank as a wonderful cyclist, peaking in the 70s, and so, I guess, respected as a bike rider in Tasmania. And Frank, it's just a real privilege to have you on the program. You were inducted into the Bendigo International Madison Hall of Fame of recent times. I think it might have been last year. That must have been a tremendous honour, because I think in 75, you had a win with Danny Clark.
Yes, I won with Danny. And, I also won there with John Trevorrow. But they used to call him Iffy, because he'd say, well, I can win if my hernia doesn't worry me, if my knee's right, if my head's right. So they christened him Iffy.
Iffy.
Yeah. But, of course, what I would have really loved to have done was won a Latrobe wheel race. I got second three times, and I used to think, my golly, you know, I won't die happy unless I can win this wheel race. But time has helped me over that matter.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. You know, I think it's cursed now. Talking about cyclists, and the Danny Clark was a real standout in my time. Sid Patterson earlier, but Danny later on. And, that ride when he won the Bernie wheel race, and they still talk about it. It really was a phenomenal ride.
Yeah.
I mean, some people have said that he was chasing tired bike riders. Well, that's probably part of it. But, I mean, the thing that, to me, and close cycling followers realised that sitting on Danny's wheel when he blasted away at about 3.5 laps to go on his own was Mark Osborne.
Yep.
And Mark was a jolly good cyclist. I mean, he'd been placed certainly in Australian titles. Mark managed to stay with him for about a lap and a half, and then he just couldn't hold the wheel any longer, and Danny rode away and left him. So that sort of helps to understand just, you know, what a great rider he was.
He was a machine, no doubt about that. And
he went overseas, of course, and won 63 six-day races.
Yes, yeah, so I've had Danny on the program. What a star.
Oh, yes, and the six-day races were a really big thing then.
Mm.
It takes long enough to count the 63, I think, but, you know, Over a decade or so, he won 63 of them. And he used to say to me sometimes, if we can get, or you can get me into the same straight as the main bunch, with three to go, I'll do the rest.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he still had to close that gap, which was nearly 100 metres, and then beat them when he got up. And he was really a superstar.
He was. And that wheel race in Burnie, I don't know who was more tired after it, Danny Clark or Tiger Dowling, who was calling it, because poor old Tiger almost blew a woofer valve that day. It was quite incredible, and the crowd noise was something to behold, wasn't it?
It was, yes. I mean, Tiger, as we said earlier, was a big, big part of the series. He built Danny up, and Danny built him up. I mean, it was a bit each way, but I know when Tiger was so sick at the end, Danny made a trip from overseas just to, you know, go and see him. A very genuine effort, the cost and the time to travel back, miss races just to see Tiger. That's what they thought of one another.
Bit misunderstood sometimes, Danny Clark. I think there's a bit of negativity. Has been a bit of negativity around him in certain circles. But I've had some dealings with him, Frank, and he's been a thorough gentleman, a very good person. And I think that has borne out in what he did there with Tiger. You also cycled with your brother Grant, who was a terrific bike rider in his own right, and won scratch races and wheel races, didn't he?
He did. No. Glad you mentioned Grant. Even though we were brothers, we were great mates, but we were completely different. Grant had the ability to be stone cold and to hop on a bike and go boom.
Yeah.
And I used to have to ride from Sheffield to La Trobe to warm up. Just completely different. And Grant beat, every sprinter that came here from overseas or the locals. And, he even beat Danny Clark. Unfortunately, Danny tried to walk him down the back straight. Grant just rode straight into him. Danny went down and broke his collarbone, I think it was. No, Grant was the most unpopular bloke, you know, in the cycling circles for a while.
Yeah, well, that's the game, though, isn't it? I think sometimes you just have to try and stay on. Now, I've been doing a bit of research, Frank, and you've got to tell us about the night when the lights went out in Wangaratta, I think it was. And there's a funny story, because I've been chatting to some particular gentleman who says Laurie Venn's girlfriend fainted when she saw all the blood in the first aid room after the lights went out in Wangaratta. What can you shine a bit of light on that for us?
Yes, I can. Wangaratta is a gravel track, but it was rolled gravel, and it was very, very fast. And we were going down the back straight, heading into the furlong, final furlong of the scratch race. Lo and behold, the lights went out. And of course, when you've got really good light, then all of a sudden you've got none. You just can't see. When the lights came on, cyclists were everywhere. Some had gone over the fence into the spectators. Others had gone out to the centre and all. And anyway, Laurie Venn, myself, they took us to the first aid room, patch us up, and Benny's girlfriend at the time came in, saw Laurie in such a mess, and next thing as you inferred, she fainted flat on her back on the floor. So there were three of us on the benches in there then.
Yeah, some funny. I suppose we could talk for hours about funny stories, but I just want to ask you as we wrap it up. You did some world age duathlons in the 90s, and because you did take to running after cycling, didn't you? And you still run and exercise today. Tell us about that world age duathlon in the 90s. I think you won that. It must have been a terrific honour for you.
Yes, I was getting on a little bit in age then. I think I was about, 50. I was 50. And, of course, I had the advantage of sight, and that stays with you, and I was still going for rides. But I started running in what was a pretty enthusiastic way, and I was running marathons at things like that, world championships, I was pretty well set up because I could ride the bike, I could run, and I had a bit of advantage over the others, but I was naturally pleased to win it. And I actually did win the Southern Cross Marathon down in Hobart too, that particular time. As we said, wonderful memories.
Yep, wonderful memories. It's been fantastic to take a little step back in time and have a chat to you about your wonderful career, both on the bike and then as you just mentioned with some marathon running and duathlons, etc. Frank, a real legend in sport on the northwest coast, and as I said earlier, really enjoyed watching you ply your trade in the coastal carnivals, which is where I first sort of got word of you and watched you cycle. A lot of people, big fans of Frank Atkins. I was one of them. And thanks very much for joining me on the Sideline View this afternoon in our Where Are They At Now segment.
Thank you very much for those closing comments. I appreciate them.